All right, we're on the record, and good afternoon. I'll now call this meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:31 p.m. on Tuesday, February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2023. Let the record also reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Present today is Vice Chair Wilson, Senator Jesse Keel, Senator Rob Myers, myself, Chairman James Kaufman, Senator Tobin is not here, but she may join us yet. Also staffing the committee today is LIO Moderator Sydney Truitt, Joanna Crossett from Records, and my Transportation Committee aide, Emma Torkelson. Happy Valentine's Day to all. Let's get the show on the roses. I mean, road, that's... They wrote that for me. So, but anyway, let's focus, and people think we rose to the occasion. Send that final text and remember to silence your cell phones. So, all right, thank you. So we have one item on our agenda today, and that's from the Super Bowl, as I heard it. It was, you have just one job. We'll hear the presentation from the Department of Transportation on the strategic investment decisions and transportation planning data. So this is around how projects are prioritized, how the work decisions are made. And presenting today is James Marks, Director of the Division of Planning and Program Development. We're happy to have you here. So please approach, have a seat, state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'll begin.
Okay. For the record, my name is James Marks, Director of Planning and Program Development for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. And, you know, I regularly tell my staff that we do a lot of good work that nobody ever sees. And in many instances, it's just as important to be seen being successful as it is to be successful. So I really appreciate, and I wanted to thank this committee's opportunity to kind of share some of the work that kind of goes on behind the scenes in evaluating, using data to make better informed decisions, and how we go about doing that, and some of the work we've done over the last year to improve that, and also, you know, kind of a sneak peek of what's to come over this next year.
Thank you. Please proceed.
So I'm going to start with a little bit of background. I was hired into my current role 5 days before the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act was passed. What an incredible responsibility that is, not just for me, but for the department, for the state, to really take this opportunity and make the most of it to deliver on the promise of IIJA for the citizens of Alaska. To have those investment decisions that are made change the potential landscape of transportation in Alaska for the better part of the next decade. So, you know, we took that seriously, and we started out with how do we frame our decision-making? How do we make decisions? It was outcomes. It was performance. It was improving lives. As the commissioner says, it's moving the needle. So how do we go about doing that? Well, we need to measure. That which is measured is improved. So we knew we needed to make better data-informed decisions. And really, that gets into a lot of what we're talking about today, which is strategic investment.
Please proceed.
So I'm going to spend a little bit of time. This is a similar format where I'm going to be looking at, you know, what happened to this last year? What challenges do we face? What inroads do we make towards achieving our goals? What's coming forward? You know, what does our planning process look like? So I'll describe a couple of models. Some of these models are industry, like the analytics maturity model, or another one called performance-based planning and programming. But some of these are specific to the department, and I'll talk about each one of those. These will be kind of that framework, so to speak, and how decisions will be made in a collaborative way. And then I'll wrap it up with, again, deployment. You know, what are we going to do about it? I mean, we've got challenges. We've got opportunities. Some of this is improving organizational performance. Some of this is creating an action plan for the department to seek out and improve our staff, our operations, the way we go about making decisions, the way we communicate and collaborate. So starting off with the retrospective, you know, this has been not a challenging but an interesting year. Lots of opportunities. You know, at the outset of IIJA, it was not just that it was a lot of additional funding, but it was a lot of new programs, a lot of new things, new discretionary programs, new formula programs. We knew that we couldn't do it on our own, so partnering was a big part of this. Looking at innovative ways and new ways of working. So I'm going to describe a little bit, and this is within the context of decision-making and planning data, on what some of those challenges and opportunities were over this last year as we tried to build up capacity within the department. So this type of slide gets used quite a bit, and this is, you know, the traditional Alaska overlaid on top of the United States, lower 48. And when it comes to, you know, investment decision making, when we're looking at whether it's regions or urban and rural and corridors, for us those decisions are really like, are we going to fund Florida or California or Minnesota? So the scope and the scale of some of these decisions are big, not just in geography, but in lane miles, in the challenges that we face with equity and equality. So this gives you a description, you know, some of those examples in statistics. You know, Alaska is the 47th in highway mileage. You know, below us is Hawaii, Rhode Island, and Vermont. And yet, our vulnerable road users' fatalities accounted for more than 28% of all of our fatalities in 2021. Our remote communities are more reliant on air and marine travel than other communities. Our freight has to travel a very long way.
Thank you. I'd just like to note for the record that Senator Lukey Tobin arrived at 1:38. I've been fighting that the whole time. So anyway, Lukey Tobin, I'm sorry for that. So anyway, please proceed.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, sorry. Question.
Just a real quick question for Mr. Marks. If you could just define vulnerable road users for me here real quick.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers, a vulnerable road user is a relatively new term, but it means typically your pedestrians, your bicyclists, your people that are more at risk from serious injury or fatality. Yeah.
I was wondering that too. So.
Yeah. Thanks. Good question. So again, our freight has to travel more per what they call mile ton than any other state in the nation. It has to go a really, really long way. Costs are higher in Alaska, so cost efficiency is important when we're looking at some of these decisions. So, you know, when we started looking at our how we go about making decisions and the state of our practice in using data, these are some of the major shortcomings when we started to quantify and lay out what are our biggest hurdles. Vision and strategy was one of the largest ones, in that there was little centralized strategy prior to this last year and how we were going to go about it, what they might call information dominance or having authoritative information. Decisions about how data is managed wasn't necessarily delegated to the lowest level, but it was put to individual data managers to be stewards and custodians of their respective data set. The challenge there is that all of these data sets need to work together, they need to inform each other, and when we're evaluating projects, they need to be synthesized so we have a holistic picture. Analytics maturity, which I'll talk about more in more detail on what that looks like in a later slide, the department is at a relatively immature level of how we use our analytics, mostly in kind of a descriptive, in some cases diagnostic, meaning we can look backwards in time and see what's happened and maybe say why it happened, but with little accuracy, with the exception of a few can't really look forward and say what's going to happen or how do we make it happen. Data governance was a challenge for us. Well, there's been several attempts at data governance, and I'll get into what some of those are, but it largely was a control mechanism, but did little for the way of data integrity or how we go about being a steward and using and synthesizing our data. And manual intervention was a big one. A lot of our systems are unique, novel, boutique stovepipe systems that don't connect or talk to each other very well. So there's a lot of manual intervention transcribing from one system to another, where the same data point might exist in three or four different systems. Something might go from system to a piece of paper, to another desk, to another system, and back and forth. And it's like the game of monkey, where you're whispering in the ear, and the message may not be exactly the same as it was when it went in. Now, this slide is a bit of an oxymoron in that we have new focuses and priorities in investing. Some of these are, most of these are coming out of our new long-range transportation plan, which is in final draft. And I say it's an oxymoron because we've got new focus areas, and that's good. We've got things that we're identifying that we want to invest in, that we've heard communities say we want to invest in. But some of these things we don't have good data on. Or data might be inconclusive. Equity is a big one that's in IIJA, that's in a lot of the funding programs now, but how do you go about defining equity? How do you measure equity? There's a lot of metrics that are out there, whether it's the Justice 40 maps that are out or economically distressed communities, there's census maps, poverty maps. One of the ones that's gaining prominence in planning communities is this access to opportunities as a metric that evaluates lots of different categories, whether it's access to schools and medical and cost of living. It takes all these things into account. The challenge before us is we need to be working very quickly to identify how we're going to go about measuring these things so that we can make the right investment decisions for things like resiliency and sustainable transportation, access and mobility.
Yes. Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, maybe this is already included in kind of how you've categorized the things, but one thing that I'm looking at that is not there is talking about future maintenance planning. Whether we're talking about a large deferred maintenance project or new construction, is that something that's being taken into account? Where, if we reroute this road, it's going to have less maintenance for the next 10 years than it would have otherwise. Something like that.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Myers, excellent question. It has two parts. So a lot of what we're framing here and more broadly in our long range transportation plan answers your question in two ways. There's the state of good repair. There's another kind of one of these overarching values called stewardship of the system. And that's really looking at some of these maintenance considerations and concerns. And yes, in some instances where we're building new infrastructure, that has an ongoing maintenance cost. Also, if we're straightening alignments or making things more efficient, it has a reduced maintenance cost. So that is one thing that we're exploring is how do we quantify all of these changes that happen by the way of going through and building new infrastructure has an effect on whether it's a positive or negative. What is that delta on total maintenance costs? We don't have that number yet, but that's something that we are working towards. So I didn't want to necessarily talk just about the challenges. There are many data sets that are good and sound and reliable. Our pavement condition, that's the rutting, the cracking, the roughness index is really, really good quality data. Bridge condition data, our substructure, superstructure, deck is all very good quality data. Safety data, travel time reliability, and our LRS or the linear referencing systems, these are like our maps, our cartographers, have good quality data. Now, I will caveat that with, these are the data sets that the federal government has said you have to report on. These are your you have to have performance measures. So in a way, we've had, you know, some data governance dictated for us in terms of we need to have certain quality data. The challenge before us is taking that same model and that same level of scrutiny to all of our other data sets. I also did want to touch on continuous improvement. So over this last year, we've had a big push towards looking backwards, learning from what went well, what didn't well, what do we want to change, and improving. And this was a great example where we came up with what we thought was a very good set of criteria to evaluate bridges. And we worked with a lot of subject matter experts, data experts, a lot of folks from the bridge section and data science firms to come up with the criteria that you see on this 2022. What we found when after we went through and ran through a project selection and evaluated projects is that criteria tended to favor bridge replacements. When we're looking at having a mixed portfolio of investments, we don't want to just always prioritize worst first, because that's a very expensive way to invest. You're always fixing something that's already broken, as opposed to preserving things throughout its long life. So we went towards a more balanced approach where 40% of our evaluation was looking at more proactive criteria, where we want to look at opportunity costs, meaning what is something going to cost to fix today versus what is it going to fix in 2 years from now, as a metric. We're looking at service life extension per dollar, meaning for every dollar we're investing in this project that's being proposed, how much extra life are we getting out of it? Then we've got the reactive criteria. Some things that additionally that popped out was some bridges just never score very well. Sometimes it's because it's rural, doesn't have a lot of volume. So one of the other things that we didn't want is bridges to stay in a poor state for a long time. So just the time in poor, delay, the effect on the traveling public. If there was a bridge that was either detoured or weight restricted, how far is that person or that freight going to have to go to get around it? In a lot of cases, there is no alternative or no detour. In some cases, it's I have to travel hundreds of miles to get around. So this is just one example of that. Looking back, how do we do it better and improving, you know, how we go about evaluating our projects going forward?
Thank you. Yes. Question, please, Senator Tobin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for joining us again, Ms. Marks. I always enjoy your presentations. I'm curious because you talked specifically about bridges. I know that in the IGA funding, there is additional monies for retrofitting bridge projects and such for pedestrian usage and multimodal. And how does that affect this 2022 to 2023 criteria from a holistic perspective? As you're going through this continuing improvement, how are you using some of these more multimodal, pedestrian-centric resources in federal funding streams to improve criterion selection process?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin, excellent question. One of the things, the U.S. DOT and the federal government, they are publishing policy statements and certain things as though they are new. So the requirement to always evaluate whether an active transportation facility can be reasonably be built has always been a requirement. They're just pushing that to the forefront as the new program that I think you're probably referring to is what they call the Bridge Investment Formula Program. That gives us the state of Alaska about $45 million per year, $225 over the life of the bill. What we're looking at here, this is criteria that we're using to evaluate our own assets. We're also going to be releasing a community bridge investment program. So a good, several good things about that new federal program is that they require that you use at least up to 15% of that funding on local and community bridges. And further, that those funds that are used on local community bridges require no match. So within the next quarter, we're going to be running a solicitation, a request for applications for community bridges, and we'll be awarding those out to local communities.
Follow up?
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a question, so direct Mark. So as you change the criteria, as in that, so I would assume that that really changed the slate of projects. So you know, this is the criteria, so you would have the prioritized slate of projects and then the new one. Was that rather profound? Or is that coming up later?
Senator Kaufman, no. I wouldn't call it profound. It made a more diversified portfolio of investment. So those same projects that were the top projects in the 2022 criteria still rose to the top, but we are also expecting to see, and this, by the way, we're getting ready to run our new solicitation, so we're yet to put, you know, we've tested the criteria, but we don't have the outcomes of these projects, but we're expecting a more diversified portfolio, meaning having some of our preservation bridges bubble to the top. Some activities can buy just as much additional life as replacement, just like a painting or chip sealing or, you know, redoing the deck. Some of these things can be preservative and extend the life decades. Not yet, I would say.
Okay, so yeah. We're still waiting on that. But I guess it intuitively it seems to make a lot of sense to me if you're kind of working into that backlog of that which is allowing deterioration more than we have historically. And so it'd be interesting to see, you know, when the criteria is run, what the resulting cut, what's the difference between the projects.
Certainly.
All right, let's proceed.
So that's some of the challenges that we've dealt with over the last year in terms of our data and our ability to use data to make decisions. I'm going to talk a little bit about planning, you know, how we're going to go about bridging that gap from those challenges and those opportunities to having better data, better informed decisions. You know, how do we set up the right structures so that they persist beyond necessarily an administration or a person? So some of this is institutionalizing how we go about making decisions and doing it in a way that's transparent. One of the challenges that I hear whenever I come to talk to committees like this is how does a project get in the STIP? And how doing this in a way that can be public and accessible, and people know which path they need to go to with their projects. So I'll touch on this one briefly. I mentioned it a couple times. This is what's known as the analytics maturity model. This describes how mature an organization is in their use of data and analytics as a state of practice. The cross section here is difficulty and value. So descriptive analytics is looking backwards in time. It's saying what happened. It's running a report and saying, okay, this is what happened. Diagnostic analytics is where you're able to say why it happened. The predictive analytics is where you're going to say, if I do something, what will happen? Prescriptive analytics is saying, how can I make it happen? There's even a fifth one in some models where you're here, and that's really machine learning. That's where the machine tells you what you need to do. We're not going to be there for a while. And to be clear, you know, as an organization, we don't neatly fall into any one of these categories. Some of our programs, practices, or data sets are more advanced because they are built on national models. Our Highway Safety Improvement Program, our HSIP, is almost getting into the predictive and prescriptive, where there's peer-reviewed literature that says if this is the design, it is not safe. And if you provide this treatment, it will improve safety by a factor of X. So that's where you're really starting to get into some of that predictive or prescriptive analytics. Most of our analytics really are in the diagnostic, in what happened and why did it happen. So when we're looking back, we can accurately tell you, either before or right now, what is our pavement condition? What are some of our safety factors or travel time reliability, equity factors? So this is all within the context of how do we move up the hill with our state of practice with data?
I have a question. I'm sorry, Senator Wilson. I'm struggling a little bit on the horizontal axis with difficulty. Is it really evaluating difficulty, or to the extent that which something has been analyzed and planned around? So is it almost effort level in terms of, in other words, how much we put into trying to analyze the problem?
Senator Kaufman, excellent point. And yes, that's exactly right. It's level of effort. It's level of agency competency in how they can use data, building it, being able to build out, econometric statistical models, the level of sophistication of information systems and how the data is safeguarded through data governance protocols. So there's, several factors that big into that, but yes, it's level of effort, and typically there's a funding component.
Almost intensity. So
yeah.
So Senator Wilson.
Thank you. The fifth program you talked about, I thought the state spent money in terms of doing that for some of our PF side of the house in terms of maintenance. And so that's not being used for more of a comprehensive plan for this side of the house. And it's not called Skynet, right?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, it is called Skynet. No. But no, we don't have that in any of our models that we're looking off of yet.
I had a cyborg maintenance worker, but we'll leave that for right now. Senator Keel, please.
Mr. Chairman, I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords. But the question to Mr. Marks, so what groups of outcomes or results are we after here? It's easy for me to understand, to imagine that we can use this for safety and crash prevention. It's relatively easy for me to imagine we can do this when it comes to maintenance and what's going to extend pavement life and all those sorts of things. But you used the term econometrics. Do we have the ability to use, if we get the data, use this to look at what makes for a more prosperous roadway through an urban area, a suburban area, what makes for a less prosperous? What applications are we looking at?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, all of that. Yeah, exactly right. And none of this is our new concepts. There are other states, there are other agencies that do this type of work where they are looking at the effect of an economy, that a project can have on the economy, that it can have on societal impacts and equity impacts and filling equity gaps in transportation infrastructure. But it's getting to the data. Sometimes it might be, in some cases, creating new data sets that we're not using yet. It might be new information systems and staff. Or leastwise training of staff. Yeah.
Thanks.
Follow up? Good. Let's go.
So I'll spend just a little bit of time here. This describes from a very high level what our planning and programming processes look like. Pre-planning is all that work that happens prior to plan development. So this is everything from studies, reconnaissance studies, creation of institutions. So I talked a little bit before about, how do we institutionalize some of these things, community coordination. But all of that pre-work feeds into how we go about making our plans, executing our plans through action steps, development and execution of programs. So selecting projects, what criteria do we use, how does that criteria further the objectives of a particular program or an area of work, and into the, you know, the day-to-day, you know, project and program management where we're actually delivering those projects. All of this needs to work together, and there should be feedback loops throughout all of this so that we can look back and see, once this project is done, you know, we did it for this reason. Did it do what we thought it was going to do? So this is these are decade-long retrospectives, because a lot of our infrastructure takes anywhere from 6 to 8 years to get to completion for anything other than like a 1R. So when we're looking at these, it's looking backwards in time. That's that diagnostic piece, and really trying to use that information to get more predictive. So taking those high-level concepts and stratifying it over how we're framing our thinking about how to go about making strategic investment decisions, there's a quote that I repeat to myself all the time, and it's begin with the end in mind. You know, we always, and sometimes, you know, almost to the detriment of action, but thinking about where we're trying to get to and working backwards. Our long-range transportation plan looks out 20 years, and it says, it paints, you know, a picture of what we think or hope that the transportation system in Alaska will look like in that time. So when we're looking backwards, are we investing towards, like, what outcomes are we hoping for in that long-range plan? And then we work backwards from there. So what are the right locations, meaning investment areas? Are these the right ones? So this is like looking out about 15 years or so and working it back even further to our mid-range planning. And this is where we start to get into the more tangible, because we have a 4-year statewide transportation improvement program, but we also maintain a 12-year comprehensive highways program. Because of our project delivery timelines taking anywhere from 6 to 8 years, we want to see when all of these program projects that we're investing in are actually going to be going to construction and hitting. So really, when we get to that mid-range, that 10-year mark, we're looking at what projects are we delivering within this next decade. Working backward, you know, even further, within the next 5 years, which programs do we implement now, do we execute, so that we have the right projects in 10 years, so that we have the right outcomes in 20 years. And then today, we're looking at, you know, are we setting the right targets? And this is getting into objectives. This is getting into specific criteria sets, so that this model works backwards in time to how do we make a decision today when we've got billions of dollars worth of needs across the state. How do we, you know, we live in a world of alternatives and opportunity costs. If we don't do this, or if we do this, we're not doing this. And what does that mean? What brings the most value?
Yeah, we have. There will be some questions on this slide, I'm quite sure. Senator?
With the knowledge that I might be setting into a pretty hot pot of water here, I'm very curious about a very specific project that's happening in Anchorage. And I know you might not be the right individual to respond fully to it. So I'm going to try to frame the question so that you can get to the answer that I'm looking for, or hopefully answer the question I'm trying to ask, which is, obviously some projects have very long time horizons. The 92nd Academy Drive in Anchorage was a very long time horizon. Now the community in that particular area, and there's particular transportation advocates in my district who are very passionate about this project not going forward, but it's at construction stage. The 20-year time horizon has lapsed, and we are now trying to implement the changes that were identified 20 years ago as necessary, but may not necessarily be the ones that we see today. How do we engage folks in that? How do we remain nimble so that we might be able to tweak at the margins some of these long time horizons? What should we have done, or what should we do in the future to hopefully not have another one of these circumstances at our doorstep?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. That's a great question, and one that the department has grappled with for a very long time, in large part because of the nature of our funding stream being so federally focused. Once federal dollars are contributed to a project, all of those that there has been historically an expectation that that project was carried through to completion. If it did not, then the state has to pay those back with state funds. So there was an outlay. That being said, the part of looking back in history, it's been our projects will proceed at any cost because of that reason. More recent thinking, maybe I'll just speak for myself, but there are others that are looking back and saying that sunk costs don't necessarily obligate future investment. And at what point does a project not make sense anymore because the situation, the social economic situation has changed so dramatically that it doesn't make sense anymore? And how do we go about identifying what those off ramps to a project look like? We don't have answers for that right now, but that is something that we're exploring with the commissioner's office. We do have some projects on our portfolio that go back decades and decades, back to the 70s. When we're looking forward and some projects consume a disproportionate amount of space, or maybe the community just doesn't want them anymore. Maybe the community says, if you finish that project, we're going to throw jersey bumpers up and not let you use the facility. We should be asking ourselves these questions. Does that still make sense? And if not, what's the off-ramp?
So what can we do to help you in that creation of off-ramps? Because I know many of us get these questions, and we want to help our constituents,
mm-hmm.
but we do feel like our hands are tied, because my answer has been the funds are already spent. Anchorage would have to pay them back, and we can't absorb that cost. So how do I help you figure out what that off-ramp might be? Not for this particular project, but just in the future.
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Tobin, we don't know the answer to that ourselves yet, for me, but maybe I could confer with some associates and get back with you.
Tap me in. I'm ready to go in, boss. Tell me how to do it.
I'd be happy to see whatever information you have on that. We'll share it with the committee. Senator Wilson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is very similar to Senator Tobin's. I think every district has those, from University Avenue and Fairbanks, 30-year-plus project, and it's not quite there. You could pick any project in the Mat-Su, the Long Lake sort of bypass, Cooper Landing bypass, the Kenai. You said that you started a 20-year outlook, but these projects take sometimes more than 20 years, so it's the same projects that are on that list. What can we do in terms of streamlining these projects, making sure that if it is a funding issue that we can say, okay, we're not going to continue with these projects? I mean, the Wasilla bypass, you guys are spending another whole study, another 2 years, and you're going to go through neighborhoods now because new developments are going there, but that's the same plan that you have worked with, that the community is saying, well, not my house. So what can we do in terms of, Senator Tobin said, in terms of legislation, or do we need to quadricate DOT and say state projects, federal projects, facilities, and Marine Highway? Would that be a better answer? We don't know, but something has to change, because the time frames of projects going 20, 30 years out just doesn't work well and across the state. And I know that you don't have the answer. Maybe you do. miracles happen and we can change these, but maybe that's something the department can help us out on and can provide to the chairs or the rest of the committee in terms of what can we do to better these projects. I understand the studies have to go through and all that. We understand those aspects, but it just seems that we start well on lots of projects, but we never end them. Mm-hmm. And we just struggle to end these projects. And so just trying to figure out, how do we do something so that we do have the end in mind, and we can see that end, just more than just having it in mind, but there's actual a pathway, a strategic goal for it to accomplish that. Big ask, I know. I'm sorry. More of a statement.
I would say that's kind of the question statement of the day. But it is a hot topic. I knew this slide would be busy. Mm-hmm. So Would you care to respond?
Yeah, through the chair, Vice Chair Wilson. That's a good question. There are things that are so the commissioner's been in his role for over a year, and I in mine for a little bit over a year. And these are some of the hard questions. I think I can categorize us both squarely as kind of men of action, meaning we do want to see things moving more quickly. There is an effort in the commissioner's office that you may have heard or likely will, what is being called Transportation X, which is this new effort of having this commissioner office focused on high-risk projects. The Windy Corner project along the Seward has been on the books for a decade, and it's still one of our last remaining and dangerous safety corridors. Addressing that more holistically is a big priority for the department. So this is one where he's actively bringing this up to give that top level focus, to look at innovative ways of doing project delivery. So that's on kind of the delivery side. On the planning side, one of the things that we're looking at is, it's not exactly a risk register, but it is a way of creating a risk model for how you go about evaluating and selecting projects, where certain categories or features can put a particular project at higher risk. If there's 50 parcels of right-of-way that have to be acquired, that can raise the risk. If there's wetlands involved, that can raise the risk if you're dealing with slope stabilization. So all of these things together can come together, can create a risk profile for a project that can be extrapolated out over, say, a given program or a suite of projects. So part of this is, the first step to solving a problem is recognizing there is one and being able to see where those problems are. So I don't think I have an answer for you today in terms of what can the legislature do, but we are acutely aware of that. We hear it all the time.
Any follow-ups? Additional questions? Senator Meyer?
Just a suggestion for Mr. Marks, if he ever does figure out that question of how to, take 30-year projects and put them back on track, that they might use you over at the Gasoline Corporation too.
Okay. So I just had some thoughts. That this is a big area of what we often hear, either being a member of the public or now representing a chunk of the public, is, about the scope, scale, and the appropriateness of a project. Mm-hmm. And it's caused some to wonder if the growth target that the project was assumed to be the answer to was off a little bit. So we're building a gargantuan project when maybe the growth model didn't play out. So the, right, the overly optimistic models. But I know in project management, it is really hard. Change orders are one of the classic ways for contractors to make money. And a poorly planned project is really prone to that. So it's really hard to create a nimble process that is also accurate and doesn't result in a bunch of changes. I'll take a little bit of privilege here. I've been studying what the Jet Propulsion Lab did in their arc of trying to get through their faster, better, cheaper initiative. And part of that initiative involved probes that were crash landing on Mars at great expense. So if you recall back when some of our planetary probes that we were sending out failed, there were errors and poor designs that resulted in them just not working as well. And it's a real interesting case of trying to work through a lean operations model that's more nimble and can do more with less, but there's some rocky patches along the way. And so just food for thought, if you get bored one night and you want to do a YouTube on faster, better, cheaper with regards to the Jet Propulsion Lab, it's a really agonizing but ultimately successful story of how to work through a process like that. But again, anything that we can do to get where the public is happier with the project when it's happening, when it's in process, and then when it's delivered, because that's a really ripe area for improvement that we see from our end of it. Thank you. Let's proceed.
So another term you may hear if you're speaking with a transportation planner is performance-based planning and programming. And this is really kind of like a subset, but this is the same idea. It's where we're using data to inform which projects we're evaluating, which projects we're selecting. It ensures that decisions move the needle, to coin the commissioner's phrase, in making progress towards goal attainment. But to be clear, this is not, you know, data driven. There are some things, some areas with either within the department or other industries that are data driven. Going back to our highway safety improvement program, that is a data driven process. The way we select pavement preservation projects is a data driven process. But there are a lot of things that are not and should not be data driven processes. The evaluation of equity and or the effect on an economy or access. So this is all part of a larger framework, and this is nationwide. So the federal government started with this several years ago, saying you must be performance based. A lot of states went through and used that as the checkbox and included a paragraph in their STIP and said we are going to be performance based, and that checked the federal box, but it didn't change anything. So what we're talking about doing and have been doing over the last couple of years is actually starting to do it in action. So that retrospective, looking back, adjusting criteria, getting better each time, that's performance-based planning and programming.
Thank you.
Looking at the, that looking backwards in time, this is another way of looking at it, but with PBPP in mind, performance-based planning and programming. It creates a framework that connects how we make plans to how we actually program those projects. This is, very specific things from pre-screening criteria, concept scoring, de-risking a project, creating project selection criteria that will achieve the outcomes and the objectives that we want to achieve in our plans. So this just kind of shows you, in very tangible way what PBPP is.
Just to comment on this, this is very similar to what's sometimes called capital value process, stage gate process used in private sector projects or project portfolios. Just question as far as the total scope, and what was that term, quatrificate? Okay, that's wonderful. I'm glad I don't have to spell that for the record. Just as far as applicability of these processes, just a little confirmation or clarity on that. So across the portfolio of DOT management, mm-hmm. what's in, what's out? So what's included under these improved or growing processes, and what aspects of DOT management is not?
That is a very good question, Senator Kaufman. The complexity lies in the way the funding comes to the state and the way programs are organized. So, we speak generally about, how a project goes through steps. But given a program, whether it's federal or state, those steps might look a little different. The criteria might be a little bit different because the NEVI program has different program objectives and goals and criteria and things that are eligible under that national EV infrastructure program versus, say, the carbon reduction program or the bridge investment program. So when we're thinking about, what path does a project take, the reality is it could take many, many different paths. We try to organize that for the public for community-sponsored projects in ways that are easy to accessible and easy to understand. For a long time, that's largely been our community transportation program and our transportation alternatives program. Those programs are largely putting community needs above. Now, when we're thinking about performance-based planning and programming, this is one subset of the overall framework, because this is really focusing on federal performance measures. So this is looking at pavement condition, bridge condition, travel time related liability, freight travel time liability, safety, some of those typical things that go on our performance scorecard. But this doesn't necessarily this isn't the end all be all for all of the objectives that we want. We know that economic vitality is one of our new focus areas, but we need to create objectives and criteria and mechanisms for funding those. So that was maybe a long-winded way of saying it's not always clear-cut that every project doesn't always take the same path.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I'm still pondering all of that. I'll continue to take a question from Senator Tobin.
Thank you. And this question comes from a constituent of mine, so I'm going to read the question as best as I can, or at least try to translate it, which is, I think oftentimes the STIP in itself is just a confusing process. This part of it is hyper-confusing to the public. So mm-hmm. What are the efforts from your perspective, from the department, on making it more fair and accessible and transparent? I understand that there's all these different buckets. How are we going to make it easy for the public to say, well, here's what we think we want. We're not sure what bucket it fits in, but mm-hmm. we'd like you to think about it, or we'd like to include it, or we want to have someone talk to us about what comes next.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. That's been the challenge for us over this last year, is trying to make the state funding programs more accessible, more understandable, so that communities know when and how to engage with us. To the extent that when we did pre-work before we launched our most recent community transportation program, where we went out and solicited input from communities, what can we do to prepare? There's going to be some funding opportunities coming up. And it was we need more time. The amount of time that communities have once we issue our notice of intent to apply, they found largely insufficient to identify and source all their projects. So we actually included more steps, what we called a pre-notice, to just let folks know that we're getting ready to run a notice. We don't have everything figured out yet. We don't have our criteria finalized yet or program eligibilities, but you should start looking for your projects. All of these steps end up, at the end of the day, it's what the communities want, but they add time, to the extent that running a complete community transportation program takes anywhere on the order of 9 to 12 months because of the public involvement and time spent engaging with them, giving them resource to accurately scope their projects, taking it before their assemblies and getting resolutions for match, and all these different steps. So it just creates for a very long process. But that's what the community wants. So the other side of it, and so that's the looking back. The looking forward is we've recognized that the traditional way of trying to engage with the public isn't sufficient anymore. Just using GovDelivery and OPN isn't good enough anymore. To the extent that the federal government has even started telling us that by way of denying some of our discretionary grants, a grant that should have been a slam dunk because it checked all the boxes and was wanted. They came back and said, you did not engage. We followed our public involvement plan, but that wasn't good enough. We need to be actively outreaching. So the point is, being more intentional about how we're communicating and being more active in our outreach is something that we're going to be working towards, especially over the next quarter, because we've got three or four more solicitations that'll be coming out between the bridge program and some of these other ones.
Yeah. Will you be asking for increments to do more public information officers or for additional resources to ensure that you're kind of meeting that needs and we're not leaving federal dollars on the table?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Tobin. Great question, and we've already kind of answered that. We don't necessarily need more internal resources. It's partnering. So we've partnered with the Alaska Municipal League, and they're doing a lot of this community outreach with us and on behalf of us. And we're also, issuing more contracts with the private industry. We have a communications contract for just this purpose, for not just internal comms, but external comms and working with the public more. So trying to get more horsepower is going to be important.
Thank you. Just time check. I notice we're at slide 16, and the final slide is 34 as a milepost. So we've got a ways to go. But I'm conflicted because I have more questions about this slide. So we may just do what we can do today. I think this whole planning and integration model is kind of a hot topic. So maybe we won't get completely through today, but. It'll, I think, be for the good. So is this the processes that you're identifying here? So the applicability is across DOT and all modes of transit. So this is multimodal and in all cases, not public facilities, I assume. Does it also extend to public facilities?
Senator Kaufman, at this time, no. But the commissioner has indicated that he does want some of the public facility side to start to integrate into the rest of the department, including the planning. Yeah.
Okay. And I figured I had asked my question better. And so that's what I was looking for. So what I've experienced before in an organization that did mega projects and portfolios of medium-sized projects and mega portfolios of little projects is that we had a common management process that had been created and had been deployed across the organization. And it had elements in it that were applicable depending upon the scope, scale, or type of project that you were doing. So is there actually something in the works, or does some aspect of that exist that makes this that proceduralized and deployed? Or is it more where we have some of these sub-elements and we're looking to knit those together?
Yeah, great question, Senator Kaufman. The answer to that question is yes, and part of it is knitting together some of this, but really it's trying to create an overarching strategy that can point all of our investments in a direction. Now, not all investments are going to be created equal or even be prioritized the same. But if we can go about evaluating things in the same way so that the process is repeatable, so that we're using the same data, so that how we go about making decisions is transparent and clear, I think that's what we're after. It's trying to get to a place where we're making better decisions with the data that we have, or improving our data, or improving our state of practice. So the shorter answer is we're not there yet. But that's what some of this work that we're talking about here and that we've been working on over the last year has been working towards, is trying to create a cohesive strategy.
So just to drill into this a little bit, so that's the on the slide what I'm focusing on is that piece. So the goal is to get where you're conceptual, and then you're developing that concept, you're evaluating it to proceed for the funding decision, and then through that funding decision, you're in the final engineering design and the project execution as a physical project. And so that's what I'm seeing in that, and that will ultimately, that's the model that it is being planned across DOT?
Senator Kaufman, yes, that's correct. Right. Yeah, the model, right.
And I know I'm asking you to say things that we've kind of already talked about. I'm just trying to draw it down into something simplistic that I can walk away with.
Sure.
Thank you.
Understood. Okay. Recognizing that I've been talking for an hour, we're going to hit fast forward a little bit, but feel free, obviously, to ask any questions. So this is kind of the exciting part. This is we've recognized some of the challenges, some of the opportunities. We're starting to create some of these institutions, and now all of these things that we've been planning for, we're starting to take action on. We're starting to execute on. Either we have recently or will be in the very near future within the quarter or so. So we identified, those kind of those four top areas earlier: organizational literacy, vision and strategy, analytics maturity. So I'll talk briefly about these in subsequent slides. From the literacy, data literacy and awareness, late spring last year, we held a data literacy workshop. Last week, we held a planning data summit where we invited transportation planners from a number of agencies. This was not just DOT. This was regional planning organizations, metropolitan planning organizations, partners from AML, federal highways, other states came and shared their state of practice. From a vision and strategy perspective, we've got a data science firm on contract, and we're working with them to create a roadmap of where we're trying to get to. We know where we're at, but what's the end state? Again, with that beginning with the end in mind, what is that roadmap, and then what are the increments that we can do this year, next year, in 5 years to create a work plan, a strategic investment plan, a data business plan. From analytics maturity, this is really getting around organizational capacity. This is getting dedicated staff. This is creating a section to do this work. Whether it's reorganization, whether it's training, creating structured training plans. From a data governance perspective, it's taken another look. The department has made several attempts at data governance, but coming at it, it's largely been used as a control mechanism. And that's one piece. Change control is a piece of data governance, but so is data integrity. So is leveraging data to make informed decisions, protecting data, having authoritative data or a single source of truth. These are all components of data governance. So there's a team that's actually looking at just that. So as I mentioned, in the spring, we held a data literacy workshop. Gartner defines data literacy as the ability to read data, analyze data, communicate with data, and argue with data. And to clarify, that does not mean you're having an argument with data, but you're using data to support your argument. It was largely we need to raise awareness. Not everybody within this literacy workshop was mostly within the department. We did invite some external partners. But it was, what are all the data sets that are out there? It was almost like speed dating, because we have so many data sets that each data manager had 30 to 60 minutes, and it wasn't all day, and this was still in COVID, so it was all on Teams. But it was largely successful. There was, at any given time, around 70 to 80 folks watching, but I think in total it was like around 120 or 130 people came and left from within the department. One of the things that we heard was, this is great, we need more of this. So we're looking at, do we do this as an annual cadence where we hold a data literacy workshop and every year get a little bit better, right? So as an organization, not just individual pockets of data excellence, but we raise total competency across the organization. That was all building up towards the data summit. So we actually were going to be starting with a data summit, but as we started planning for and preparing, it was, we actually need to do a lot of pre-work and get, so that's what was the impetus behind starting the data literacy workshop, was getting folks up to a certain level so that they could have meaningful conversations. The goal of the summit was really, how do we not just raise literacy and awareness on our data, but how do we engage and get feedback? How do we use information from an event like this to help guide where we want to go? So there was some tabletop exercises, there was some active solicitation and feedback, and you know, we got a lot of folks involved, a lot of sponsors and partners were there. This gives you a sense, just, you know, really high level, what some of the attendance looked like. This is, we had it was at the BP Energy Center in Anchorage, and we had a pretty robust attendance. And to be candid, I wanted to start with just internal to the department, because this is our first attempt at something like this. And I wanted to try and give us a chance to get our legs underneath of us before we took something out to the public. The commissioner likes to challenge us, so he said we need to get more people involved, and I'm glad that he did, because it was successful. We had some, you know, technical difficulties, but we worked through them, and it was largely a success by everyone that participated. So, go.
Yes, thank you. I know that wasn't, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this wasn't an all-inclusive list, but it looks like it's just road system communities. Was anyone sort of off-road system invited? I.e. Juno.
Thank you.
Just scored points there.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilson, the invitation was targeted to specific transportation planning organizations, so MPOs, RPOs, and federal partners. The goal, the long-term goal for this, is that it is an every-year event, and it is, and this, I'm probably getting ahead of myself, but the vision of this, that this could be something for all transportation planners across the state, whether you're a city manager, a city planner, a city clerk, a place for everybody to come together and raise collective awareness in the state on how we use data and how we go about making decisions. So the goal would be for next year that it would be exactly that. It would be including you know, the city manager, or the public works director, or someone from every community. That's a larger event, and that would include, you know, other folks. We've already been in conversations with Niels Andreasen from Alaska Municipal League about, you know, potentially a shared venue or forum where we could do something collaboratively. And so the short answer is yes or no, but soon.
Just question on that. Yeah. That the scope of it. So it almost sounds like the opportunity is not so narrow in terms of just doing more with data, but also kind of more holistic perspectives of transportation needs, almost like a annual transportation summit. It sounds like mission creep, I know, but I'm just thinking that as a subset of conversation, that's certainly important, but big picture there. And I don't know if other forums are already carrying that bucket of water. Forgive me if they are.
No, Senator Kaufman, that's an excellent, you know, point. And, you know, we have certain objectives for why we're doing it and what we're hoping to get out of it. The theme was, after a lot of pre-solicitation and working with, like, what do you want to get out of this type of event? And a lot of it was that we heard was, how do we better use our data to make decisions? So the theme was more towards the audience, even though you're absolutely right. There's a bigger picture here, and that's improving the state of practice in how we use data and use data to make decisions. I would even go so far as to say that in future iterations, it would be making that theme and those goals more specific. You know, to the extent that maybe there's even tracks of discipline where there's a transportation, you know, data, you know, analytics, or a GIS.
Like communities of interest.
Yeah. Precisely. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. And I have to say, I'm very thankful for, even though asking questions, for what's being worked on here is definitely right track. And I'm happy to say it, so don't take the questions as a doubt. So thank you. Let's proceed.
So again, we went into this with goals and objectives up front. We wanted all content, all sessions to be intentional towards achieving those goals. It was not just demonstrating what's possible by bringing in out external agencies. We brought in the DOT in Virginia, who's got, I think, a whole army of data scientists at their disposal to show, what their state of practice looks like. And what was nice about things like that is they made it contextual to where we're at now. They said, we were exactly where you were 10 years ago. And, it wasn't it was in the context of partnership, meaning some of this work has already been done, and it took others a lot of trial and error to get there. So we could get, to a pretty amazing place, but in an expedited format, because other people have already done a lot of this work. I mentioned, raising data literacy and organizational competency. Some of this was interactive tabletop visioning exercises, where we broke out into groups, trying to create a more data-informed culture so that everyone throughout the agency values data as an asset. And then also coming up with a work plan for this coming year so that every year we work on improving and chipping away at that roadmap while always soliciting information and feedback about how to do it better.
Thank you.
So I probably got ahead of my slides. This is, what was some of the agenda items. There's the gentleman from Texas Transportation A&M walking through how, some of the tools that they've got. And by the way, what was nice about including some of these folks from other states and federal partners is they actually came up to me and my colleagues after, like, this is great what you're doing. Bring us back. We want to come back and do this more. We can help. So there's a lot of desire out there to try to fast track and take some of their lessons learned and implement them here in the state. So not necessarily planned, but one of the nice unintended consequences of including other states. We ran through a number of software demos, demonstrations. Whether it was going through our data catalogs, different GIS applications. We did have multiple rooms at the BP Energy Center where folks could go out for a breakout session and get a specific GIS application tutorial that was tangible. They could take back to their work and use it daily. Working through the traffic data portal, we had our vendor who manages traffic data, and just making the data and the information more accessible. What you see on the right in this slide is just a dozen of some of our applications that exist, and they're all separate. So one of the things is how do we bring these things together so that they're more accessible, so that you don't have to have 1,000 bookmarks or a bunch of different applications, and that the data works together. So recognizing some of these challenges helps to frame where we want to go. I mentioned we had breakout tabletop exercises where we broke out into groups, and it was what were our challenges, whether it was inadequate staff or bandwidth. These are some of the responses that came back in order of priority. Just having training and awareness, access and utilization. The timeliness of data was a challenge, or missing data, lack of tools. We also had those same groups brainstorm solutions. Like, what can we do now? There was a very large focus on having dedicated staff just focusing on the planning data analytics and data science. That hasn't been done before within the department. We have done that now. We've created our strategic investment section. I actually have with me in the gallery Jill Melcher, who is our strategic investment chief, and she's been doing, I'm presenting a lot of this work, but she's been executing on a lot of it. Training on how to access and use the data was a solution, as well as common data language. We have many systems, many different ways of describing things and lots of acronyms. So being able to communicate what a data point is to anybody can sometimes be a challenge. So coming up with common language and how we talk about and use data, and maybe reducing the number of acronyms or making more of them so they're more specific.
Was that for your TLAs?
I don't know.
Three-letter acronyms.
Yeah. Okay.
I should say for the folks watching at home.
So this is was some of the, there's an application that you may be familiar with called Mentimeter, where it was active, engagement and participation. So as the groups were in their breakout sessions, we would pose, series of questions. It was, what are your challenges? What are some solutions? And what would you recommend to fixing it? And we walked through each one of these questions on specific areas. It was the utility of data. It was the quality or completeness of data. It was the literacy and awareness of data. It was a fun exercise. It actually went longer than we were expecting. We went into the lunch hour because folks just wanted to keep working through it. I think it took the better part of an hour and a half of kind of going through these in a bit of a methodical manner. This gives us good information coming out of this. Whether real or perceived, this is real to the person who's answering these questions. So whether it is a new process or a new system or just being better communicators, this gives us something to work from.
Yes, please.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, as my previous positions in the nonprofit sector were really around data-driven nonprofits, data-driven fundraising. And it makes me very excited to see the department taking and trying to wrap their hands around how to be more data-driven, how to be more comprehensive in identifying where real change can happen and occur. What makes me the most excited is to see the pictures of all of the folks in the room together, because although it's empowering to have the data and to analyze it, being in the room together to hear the different and diverse ideas, to have the opportunity to be synergistic, to recognize that there is a collective goal that you're all trying to work toward and you bring different lenses to the conversation, that's where I get really excited, is to see those pictures. Because it's not just about the data. Although the data is very powerful and very important, that picture is really where the success is. Those are Alaskans looking to solve some of our big issues around transportation, and I am jazzed to know that they are on our team.
Through the chair, Senator Tobin, thank you for that comment. And that's, leading into this presentation is why I sincerely wanted to say thank you for this opportunity, because there's a lot of this work that happens and nobody sees it. And there's a lot of people that care very deeply for trying to make a better system. And yeah, thank you for that comment.
I don't think I'm impugning anyone here when I say, I think we have the right collection of geeks to appreciate this. So I hope no one's offended by that, but just knowing some of the questions that folks at this table ask. So, all right, so let's roll. We got 10 minutes. So I think we're doing great.
So the other element, moving on beyond the data summit, is what is our roadmap, our collective roadmap? Some of those images I showed you earlier about the whether it was the model about how decisions are made or the looking backwards in time. Those are all part of this larger kind of, transportation planning data roadmap that we've built. And that roadmap is not just a visioning document. It has specific actions that we want to take this year and some of these things that are going to take longer. But it helps us to create a punch list of things and start working that punch list. Data governance, being able to develop a strategic data plan that includes a data set inventory, gaps, roles, and processes. Being able to determine which data sets are of statewide significance. You know, both of these things are largely within, probably within the year that we're targeting to try to get some of these things. Some of the full comprehensive list of data sets, you know, may take longer. Longer term, data governance priorities, centralizing data, assessing use cases, those are bigger lifts because you're talking about enterprise level data, whether it's data warehousing or creating data lakes or marts, pulling things together, starting to use more sophisticated tools like R and Python to synthesize data. And we've got individuals within our teams that want to do this work that are capable, have been trained to do this work. But we just need to institutionalize it. I'm not going to read all of this, but this, you know, expanding agency capabilities. One of the things that we got from our data science firm is we know that we needed to create a section and dedicate resources. We know that we need to create training plans. But what does a portfolio of services from this team look like? And what is their daily work? What's the tangible work? Developing criteria is one of those things, evaluating the past and looking forward. But what are the specific roles? What are the specific competencies that we need to fill out and do some of this? We know where Virginia DOT is. What does it take to get to something like that? So it was, what skill sets do we need? What training do we need to offer, either tuition reimbursement or offering to get certifications? Working with the university or the American Planning Association to try to create a pipeline of individuals or internships. So part of this is how do we look, what do we want our workforce within transportation planning data to look like in 10 years? It's not just data scientists. Sometimes it's a decision scientist or a business, just a business analyst or a spatial analyst.
Any questions? Senator Q?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the cynic on my other shoulder, not this one, that shoulder, asks, what do all these people do when they run into the person who's been at the department for years who said, we widen lanes, we speed up traffic flow, that's what we do?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. A big piece of this is culture change, and this isn't just within the section or even the division. This is department-wide. We're very fortunate to have Commissioner Anderson and Deputy Commissioner Keith, Deputy Commissioner Bender, who are all taking on the mantle of becoming more data-informed, rapid delivery. As they say, we are doers. So they're looking for results. So the alignment and the opportunity for us to execute on some of these things is very real and it's very near term. There is that remnant that we still go up against, that go off of gut feelings, that go off of, you know, what they think the transportation department is. And I might end that answer or footnote it with there was a quote. Secretary Omashokan for the Department of California, Department of Transportation in California, said, you know, we're no longer departments of highways or even transportation. You know, we're humanitarians. And that spoke largely to, you know, transportation's ability to improve lives. And it's not just about congestion anymore.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I'll throw it out there.
Senator Wilson.
So, you know, we've heard a lot of departments talk about cultural change and shifts. And that happens easy when you have the top administrators coming and going, you know, 2 years in, 4 years out. But other than euthanizing those folks that have been there 30, 40 years, how do you change that culture within those departments? And this is a serious question. I mean, it goes to the entire state of Alaska, is how do we change culture change within those departments?
Do we need a disclaimer that we're not promoting euthanization? I'll offer that for the record for the folks listening at home. Please, if you would, go ahead and respond.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilson, it is, you know, a challenge, but it's one that we want to do collaboratively and intentionally, meaning explaining the why. Why are we looking at a potential change in how we're doing things? Some of this is, you know, some of it is time. Some of it is being direct in what the priorities for the department are. I would say one of the biggest things is being intentional about it, and deliberate. To your point about, you know, the change that can happen and the disruption in leadership that can change, that's one that's very near and dear, you know, to planning's heart, because the plans can drastically change. And how do we, so, you know, part of this is how do we institutionalize this decision-making framework in a way that can persist? It doesn't necessarily bind up anyone, but at the same time, it creates frameworks. So while it may not be in our plan to euthanize, it might be in our plan to work collaboratively with to help people get there and do it in a way that's in a way of partnership.
I'm going to give a 2-minute warning.
So I touched on this earlier. It's not just staff. It's not just training. It's also creating institutions, creating feedback loops, evaluating and improving our data practices. I think I touched on a couple of those. Some of this is information systems. We're dealing in some cases with information systems that are 40 and 50 years old. A lot of stovepipe, novel boutique systems. How do we pull them together? How do we modernize them? How do we integrate or interface them such that any given data point has a source of truth and it's authoritative? Coming up with training plans, as I mentioned, reorganization and dedicating staff and resources. How we go about dedicating our resources. We have our strategic investment areas from the long-range transportation plan. Some of this is, you know, more effectively communicating to the public what those investments are buying. So what if we're going to do this project, what is the expected end result? That also helps us to remain accountable when that project is done. Did it do what we say it was going to do? So some of this is laying things out. A big piece of this will be the development of our strategic investment plan, which will, in very clear terms, describe what has been in this presentation and others about how the department goes about making decisions so that it is clear how a project gets in the STIP.
Just a pause. We're at 3:00. Is everybody okay with just a little bit more, or do we want to wrap it?
We have a meeting.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we'll have to wrap it up. Did you have any closing comments or questions?
I would like to ask some questions about this particular slide, so I will hold them until the next time this presentation is brought forward.
The other thing that I was going to offer is if anyone on the committee has questions, funnel on these remaining slides or in general, funnel them to us. We'll pass them through, collect them, and share them back to the team. So I really have to thank you. I really like what I'm hearing. I know it's a challenge. It's massive. You know, portfolio project management on a grand scale, very diverse. But the tipping point to change is trust. And what I hear is a lot of what you're working on is that trust, data-driven trust, but also organizational, more functional organizational and the outcomes that come from that. So thank you. And with that, at 3:01 p.m., I'm going to bring this to a close. But thank you again for your testimony today. It was great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.